Hola! Welcome to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita, the only Spanglish anti-diet podcast that teaches you from a sociological lens, feminism, and intuitive eating coaching to dismantle diet culture. I'm your host, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez, and I am passionate about dismantling diet culture and helping you heal your relationship with food and your body. I'm a mother, daughter, comadre, amiga, community member, professor, health coach, and published author. On this show, I share my personal experience with diet culture, tips and strategies, and educational content to help you understand diet culture and systems of oppression so that you can have the tools to challenge diet culture. Current and future generations do not deserve to inherit your diet culture trauma, and I'm here to help you. If you're on a mission to heal your body and food traumas and embody your authentic self unapologetic, welcome to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita. Bienvenidos a Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita. This is your host, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez. I have the amazing pleasure and honor to be in community with someone who I admire and respect a lot, whose work I've used in my sociology courses. And esa es como la entrevista que he estado esperando desde el año pasado y se logró este 2024. So without further ado, let me go ahead and introduce my guest. Omni Solis Flores is a queer non-binary immigrant poet and licensed clinical social worker. They were born in Zacatecas, Mexico, and reside in the northeast San Fernando Valley. Their work has previously been featured in Razor Cake Issue. I wanted to say that in Spanish. State Split, QT Pac Cruising the West Tour, Atladena Literary Review 2020, and the upcoming short film Shadow at Night. Their debut full-length collection poetry of belonging is out now on World Stage Press. Welcome, Omni.
Thank you so much. Gracias por invitarme. It's a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this for a year or two.
That's right. Well, so we're going to keep it like honest, raw, vulnerable, because we want our audience to have this medicine that you're going to offer, right? And our experiences. So let's go ahead and dive in. Platícame, eres de Zacatecas. How was that like childhood? And, you know, we're going to talk about immigration and identity and transitioning, like as a metaphor, no?
No, sí. No, pues está un poco complicada mi historia. I was born in Zacatecas. Both of my parents are from Durango. And I believe my dad at the time was working in Zacatecas, so I ended up being born there. Me cuentan que fue un hospital de monjas, and you know, I was born in December. My birthday was a couple weeks ago, and
talk about un chingo de frío, según. ¿Verdad que sí?
But it makes sense because I'm always cold. Bien friolenta salí. And then my childhood there was very minimal. My parents immigrated to the LA and the San Fernando Valley area when I was very, very young. So they brought me over, I think I was about two, and then we had a second migration when I was around like five. So most of my family is from Durango. And then also I have on my mom's side family in Mexicali, which is a border town with Calexico.
Entonces one thing I want to say is like, you were born in a convent.
No sé la palabra específica, pero me dijeron que donde nací era un hospital donde creo que antes era un convento y se convirtió en un hospital.
Ah, talk about like really challenging the patriarchy, right? Since birth.
¿Verdad? Y fui cesárea, así que.
That's right.
And pobre de mi mamá.
Yes, you literally by birth. You've been challenging heteronormativity, and so that's amazing. So I just wanted to say that. Platícame, entonces you were a child, right? You were like a toddler when you got to this country, right? Can you share for those? Because, you know, in the academic literature, we're labeled as the 1.5 generation, right? The 1.5 generation right. Are those of us who were born in another country and raised in the United States. Entonces, yo, tú y muchas personas que nos escuchan son esta parte de este 1.5 generation. How was it for you growing up in the US?
Oh, geez. It was a trip. My first of my mis primeras memorias fueron, creo, then I was like around 3 or 4 in like Lincoln Heights. That's where my parents originally landed out here. And then, I mean, my world at that time, it was just where we lived in a very small space. It was my parents and my older sister. And my only interaction really with the world was hearing about it with my sister, because she was older, so she was already in school. So she was in like a, well, if, I don't remember the school name from what I hear from other friends that grew up here. That was one of like the only like bilingual schools in LA that would teach like new arrivals, right? So I would always just hear my sister's experience and her good and bad days, right, when I was little. And then I think most of my memories that are more present now are when we moved out here to the Valley. So we've lived all over. I say Northeast San Fernando Valley in my bio, because we lived in Pacoima and Sylmar and San Fernando and Lake Terrace, which is, they're all neighboring little areas out here near the foothills. So I think most of my memories are in Pacoima and, you know, going to school and being bused to the better schools, depending on what street we lived on at the time, right?
Mm-hmm. Was that?
And I also have, yeah.
Perdón. Was that, because this is like not a unique, como dicen, experience in the sense of like so many of us, like growing up, may have gone to so many different schools, no? Ya como me platicas, pues you were in different spaces most of the time. How was that for you in the like adjusting and the acculturation?
It was very, very difficult, because wherever I had friends, and then we moved somewhere else, right? I thought it was a new school, and I was about to mention, I also had little stints in El Paso and also in Arizona. So I feel like most of my childhood was adjusting to new spaces and doing the best I could, right? So yeah, I don't think it was till like my adult college, quote unquote, life where I finally was like, okay, I feel like I am from the Valley, sort of, right? But this is where I have friends and I have like my chosen family, and you know, I'm from Mexico, right? But this is where the people that I love and are closest to me are located. So it's where I connect a little more, just as an adult. But I don't, even saying that feels weird, because it's like,
yeah,
I don't have like a certain set in stone place that I can like that's where
I'm at. And I think you say that in your book. In yo lo siento en uno de los poemas, and you can talk more about that when we get to that, but yeah, that's so true. Like, why do we have to feel that we need to have this one place of belonging, right? The title of your poem, of your book, it's like you're in between all these different spaces, right? And that's so beautiful. So it's like, for anyone who's listening, like, soy de aquí, soy de allá, soy de todos lados, ¿verdad? You know, just to claim that for those who might be struggling. Platícame a little bit about your education, you know, going through like the education system, like eventually to get to this point of like, you're an amazing poet.
Oh my God, it's such a journey. Obviously, con tanta movida por todos lados, there was many schools. But I think to make it a little shorter, once I completed finally like my high school diploma, because I didn't graduate on time, I ended up other things, right, that life comes, and I completed it at an adult school that was in Pacoima at the time, called Pacoima Skill Center. So if anyone's listening that went, you know, went there, shout out, because I don't think I could have gotten through a lot of things at that time without that program. But after that, I ended up going to do like the community college system. So Los Angeles Mission College in Sylmar. And then I completed my partial undergrad and transferred to Cal State Northridge for my bachelor's. And then, you know, had a stint as a student aide through the, you know, LA Unified, and then signed up for grad school, and I got my MSW, and that ended, and then I went, you know, back to school for poetry and manuscript writing with the Community Literature Initiative. That's, you know, out in South LA. That happened through the start of the pandemic, so it was like this virtually. But
sí.
that's kind of my journey.
Eso fue entonces como ya as an adult. The did you write poetry growing up, like fue ya ahorita de una being an adult?
You know, from what I remember, and I think I've said this before in like another interview, where I used to write very like dark, spooky, like short stories while I was in school. And I mean, as you know, growing up with immigrant parents, you kind of have to decide career-wise or job-wise something that's gonna support yourself and the family, if that's, you know, your position. So I put writing in the back burner for most of like my adult school life. So I felt when I finally finished the social work program at TSUN, I finally had the space to kind of explore my writing more, and I landed in poetry.
Me encanta. And this is just also an affirmation for folks that it's never too late, right? That it's never too late. Yes,
definitely.
The
class was Community Literature Initiative. It was such a range of people. It was a fresh 18-year-old to someone, you know, in their 50s or 60s, and the in-betweens like myself in their 30s. Like, it's never too late to do or find your passion, right?
That's right.
It's like a later in life.
Yes. It's never too late. And then your passions can evolve. There may be like a season of those passions and like a closure and the beginning of new ones. So this is an invitation for everyone who's listening to tap into those passions and go for it. Sometimes we give so much value to the number of our age, right? And it's just a fucking number, but it can definitely prevent us from doing things because we may feel old, right? Or que te critique la familia o las amistades, la sociedad.
Ay, no, a la verga con eso. Hay que hacer lo que queremos hacer, right? Y para los que nos están escuchando, si encuentran su pasión después, tenemos más experiencia y más experiencia de la vida. Poder empezar una aventura nueva. Así que tenemos un advantage también. Yeah. Hay que verlo de esa manera.
Yeah, it's like we've been conditioned to believe and internalize that ya se fue el tren, ya pasaron estas oportunidades, pero that's part of the system of Western and white supremacy, right? That you should be doing certain things at certain stages and transitions of your life, right? And the reality is que no, así no es la vida. Así es de que whatever you have out there, anyone who's listening, just fucking do it. Just do it. Get the courage. And if you don't have the courage, find the support system, right? That's gonna push you to do that thing that you're fucking scared of. Because whatever you're scared of is something that we need. we need that for the world. Me gustaría que platicáramos si quieres, which is part of this podcast, is fuck being calladita, right? It's like, it's talking about, I don't even want to say taboo, but it is taboo in our families, ¿no? Es taboo porque le estamos dando ese poder, ¿no? Y we're here to say fuck it. And es hablar de la sexualidad, hablar acerca de nuestras múltiples de identidades. Mm-hmm. How was that for you? I know it's a loaded question.
No, pues sí.
está
difícil.
I know.
No, pues sí. I think you mean like more towards like my writing.
Yeah, your writing and sexual being, who you are, and like growing up in an immigrant Mexican household, you know, like raised and you know, oppressive religion, all that shit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's difficult. I feel obviously you read my book and it was very difficult to get it to where it's at in your hands, right? Because in writing, I never had the plan of this is going to be a book, this is going to be something. I was just doing it for myself and exploring that passion that I found. Because, you know, we deserve it, you know, to those listening, if writing is your passion or there's something you want to do as an older adult, doesn't mean you have to publish it, doesn't mean you have to do anything with it. It can be just for you. So that's what I initially did it for. And, you know, through readings and doing, you know, events with other poets, I found the program and this is what happened with it. But with the content itself, I wrote it in mind. My audience was myself and other queer immigrants, trans immigrants, other
people. Can you read the title? Tell us, dinos, give us context. Okay, tell us the title of the book. Y ya le síguele. Para que la gente, para que lo compren, go buy it right now.
No, sí, go buy
it. Put it in your car.
it's Belonging, and it's on World Stage Press. So you can find it on their website and you can find it on Amazon. Also, Tia Chucha's Cultural Center out here in the Valley has copies. Actually, I need to replenish my copies with them, but you can find it in those multiple places. Pero sí, el contenido, como dije, lo escribí pensando en mí, en mi audiencia. No lo escribí con censura. Y hasta que me tocó editarlo al final, I was like, oh, should I be this candid and be this open about sexuality, about gender identity, about my business with my family, right? Things that I'm writing and I'm putting out there. And people who read it may put this specific feeling towards specific people that I'm writing about. And, you know, obviously we're multifaceted. And some of those things I did end up switching around, not the events, but maybe the people or the feeling or the writing ended up going a different way. I didn't want to point fingers or put my business or, you know, it is my business because it's my experience, but the experience of people in my life, you know, that's they're not right. The ones being so vocal and putting everything out there that happened to them. So I had to be mindful of that. I think that was where I censored myself and my writing a little more, just to being mindful of who I'm writing about. But everything else, you know, dije, ni modo.
La chingada.
It is what it is. Yeah, my mom always said, hay que hablar las cosas como son. Y más, lo más que hacemos eso, más lo más que hablamos, menos se quita el tabú, especialmente en nuestras familias y en nuestras comunidades que es tanto secreto o lo que se ve no se pregunta, right? That's what we really, at least in my generation, that's what we grew up knowing with Juan Gabriel on TV and everyone knowing, but not really saying it or talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Parece que tuviste el apoyo de tu familia that you had. Was always the case? Because to write this very beautiful queer book, you know?
No, ahí se complica un poco porque la única persona que de mi familia que sabe es mi mamá. Because I told her, like, you know, I'm in a writing course. This is my, you know, I was like, this is my book proof. You know, if you want to read it, tell me. But aside from that, I don't keep in contact with a lot of family. And whether it's situational or past things or maybe my own internalized shame of who I am and who I'm expressing as myself now, more honestly, that keeps me from, you know, building bridges or what have you.
That's powerful right there. That's so powerful. Oof.
Mm-hmm. So I think those in my life that know it are those important to me. So my mom and my chosen family and maybe a few exes in there that aren't named, but les quedó el saco.
Pónganselo si les quedó, ¿no? Si les quedó la pedrada que les aventaste. You know, it's so powerful when you said, and I feel like that's kind of what I've did in the past, and I don't want to keep doing that is like showing up with family because of that internalized shame of our sexuality or fear of rejection. And when we do that, I feel like we dim our light and our energy and who we are, and that takes us to, like, honestly, I feel like dark places, and it's not good. And a lot of, like, healing, not to be able to be with the people who love you and who accept you and put family members, you know, in another chapter of your life, and have that chosen family, right? That who's gonna honor you and see who you are, right?
No, sí, exactamente. It's difficult because I've only recently, I think writing the book really helped me get in that headspace of who are the people that are important to me in my life and who deserves my whole truth, right? Who honors my whole truth, who sees me for me, and my, you know, gender or orientation is just a part of me, right, to them. Because I always, when I have doubts about people in my life that I love and I want in my life not reacting positively to my truth, is that they should know, right? We were queer children. They knew deep down, whether they acknowledged it or talked about it out loud. And I always think they loved me then. So then I think that's what I hold on to, whether I, you know, I haven't started some journeys with certain people, but I always hold on to, they loved me then and I was queer then. So if they decide that honoring that truth out loud is difficult, then that's their process. And it's no longer my shame and it's no longer the weight that I need to cross. Mm-hmm. Because that's also a thing mm-hmm. That we need to do to honor ourselves is mm-hmm. know when to mm-hmm. walk away.
Mm-hmm. Yes, y me imagino que therapy, ¿qué te ayudó con todo esto? And this is folks who are struggling. You know, I'm a community college professor and a lot of my students, I feel like it's a blessing and an honor that come out to me or they're sharing their struggles at home. And they have me as a support system. There's our campus therapy, but for folks who may feel like, no sé qué chingados que hacer, you know, I don't know, I feel alone, or, you know, what's your advice as, you're also a licensed social worker, so put on your multiplicity hats
so, yeah, here. So therapy, you know, we all need it, but I know it's inaccessible to a lot of our community members. And it was inaccessible when I was growing up. At some point I did have access to it, but, you know, it wasn't a queer informed or queer friendly therapist. So there's a lot of challenges in finding therapy. So I know we all joke and say on the internet, like, men should go to therapy. We should all go to therapy. Y, you know, todos necesitamos terapia, pero sí es difícil. Hay que mencionar eso porque no es fácil encontrar un psicólogo o psicóloga mm-hmm. that they mesh well with our experience.
Right? That's right. And that they might be queer, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it can create more harm too, you know, just to interject, you know, that it's okay yeah. that one therapist that you had at one point in your life was amazing. And maybe you're at a different stage in your life and you need someone else. It's okay. You don't need to keep the same therapist. And you have the right to say, like, this therapist is actually causing perhaps more trauma, more damage, you know? And that's kind of what happened to me. I went through three different therapists until finally I found one. She is cisgender heterosexual, but, you know, she'll say stuff here and there. You're like, oh, what the fuck, you know? Pero I'm still in that journey. I want to find an accessible, you know, que tengas, you know, that my insurance can cover it, to find a queer therapist where I can really be vulnerable and not feel like I'm being judged, I'm being shamed, or using language that makes me feel shame.
Exactly. Yeah, even as an adult, the last time I was in therapy, it was such a journey to find a therapist, even con aseguranza, right? So, you know, no se agüiten if you really are committed to that journey. There are ways to do it. It's a process like everything in this country, in this life, right? But to the original question, I think for those listening, we have computers in our pockets now, right? I know maybe I'm aging myself, but I grew up with internet, without internet, with big house phones, you know, with dial up, and now with, you know, a small little machine in your pocket that connects us everywhere. And, you know, obviously nowadays we see a lot of tragedies and genocide and killing of people. And so obviously use that tool at your discretion and with breaks and all that. But there's so many communities out there. There, at least for me, I know I found a lot of community growing up with the internet. you know, on MySpace, finding different groups of people that like the same music as me. Yeah, and a throwback. This was me logging on in the library for like the 10th hour, right?
Yes.
So yeah, I think in the spirit of finding your passion, finding those little things you like in life and finding other people that like those things. So yeah, music, horror movies, those are things that I love, and I found community through them, and I found other queer people through them. And now as an adult, I will say finding folks at the Achuchas, El Hormiguero in Pacoima, I feel like that's when I truly found people that were mirrors to my experience, mm-hmm. and honored my truth, and I honored theirs in return.
Yes. You know, it seems super easy, like, okay, pues aquí están todas las cosas que puedes hacer, you know, find community, todo esto. Mm-hmm. Fuck, it's fucking hard. You gotta get yourself out there. Like, no va a llegar la comunidad. No. O sea, we do have community. We have different, we belong to different groups, different communities, right? But if we want that queer community or that support, like, well, you gotta take that step. It's great that you think about it, pero órale, you need to reach out to those organizations or those folks and like take the first step. That is hard.
Yes.
Yeah, lo estoy diciendo por propia experiencia. So I'm holding myself accountable here. Like going to my first queer outing, OMG. And like, no, hombre, esa otra dimensión. It was fucking nerve-wracking. I did it. And slowly, you know, pero I need to look for that community. Because si no la tengo donde vivo, o no me siento a gusto, o no me siento, I don't feel safe. I need to look for it, but I need to take that step. And I don't have to do it alone. I can find a friend or someone else who's straight and to hold my hand, to take me or like be there, you know? Like, so we're sharing this because we're telling you it's not easy, you know? Let's like not romanticize like community, mm-hmm. community. It's fucking hard, you know?
So hard. One thing I will say for our listeners, when I was in grad school, I interned at the Pride Center at Cal State Northridge. And one thing that I really loved, and the institution, obviously institutions, you know, people, but in the support of the queer community members on campus, like, and off campus, we had a couple that had just immigrated to the States, and they were adults, they weren't in school, but they reached out to our center, and we were like, you know, we're a public school, so if you want to stop by for one of our coffee nights or movie nights, come and, you know, be in community. So those out there, like, if you have a public school, college campus or community college that has like a queer club or a queer center, reach out to their like organizers, because, you know, you're allowed to be there. And if you want to find a community in that sense, that is possible. I know it's hard to get out of the house, even more so now with so many pandemics, but you can do it. I always commit to myself because it's hard for me to get out of the house at least one outing a month. You know, it's out of my comfort zone and all that. But
yes, I love that, and thank you. This sparks for me like something that I would love to do in my campus, you know, with our Pride Club and our Pride Center space that we now have, and getting our community involved so that they feel that sense also of belonging, right? So thank you. I'm excited to really embark on this. Yes. Y ahora lo más acontecido es tell us about the book, and I would love for you to read maybe one or two poems.
Yeah, of course. The book, oh God, I wrote it through the pandemic, so it's such a wild time memory in my head, because it's been 4 years. It was a project in the making, because I've been fully writing since around 2015, 2016, and it culminated to this. As I mentioned earlier, I was part of the community literature program, and they really helped shape my writing and what the book is, so shout out to them. And my teacher, Kamari Carter Hawkins, shout out to her. It was just her birthday, so happy. If you're listening, happy belated. You're also a Capricorn, so I ride with Capricorn so hard. But the book, so it's called Belonging, and short way to summarize it, it is kind of a look through kind of chapters in my life and kind of fictionalized. Not everything is 100%, you know, real, just to protect myself and others, but it goes through different sections. So I have it in front of me. So I think the first section is like queer memories. So it's like different poems about growing up, you know, in the States, you know, remembering the migration trips that we had, crossing, you know, in the desert, and kind of finding my identity just as a person, as a Mexican here, and meeting other Chicanos, right? And that weird dynamic that, at least for me, was a little difficult to manage. Porque se sintió un poquito ni de aquí ni de acá, even with our people, right? Sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
And yeah, it goes through many different sections, from falling in love to, you know, sexual awakening to breakups to healing ourselves from different traumas. So it's a very small book, but it has a lot of different subjects that I touch on. And I feel like I wrote it for other queer people.
Yes.
So.
I love it porque lo puedes leer en no manches, como unas 2 horas, o sea, menos tal vez. Por eso me encanta. Like, I think about like my students, like, this is a great book. No excuses. Yeah. It's too dry or too long. It's just
it's very
bright.
Accessible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote it with myself in mind because I struggle with focus and reading. I go in bouts of like 1 month, I'll read like 5 books and then a whole year without reading because I can't focus. So yes, I love short books.
Y escoge dos poemas y dinos por qué te gustan esos dos. I mean, you wrote these, so like, all right, must be difficult to pick like this. I really love this one, you know?
A ver. There's one in here that is a little, un poco controversial.
Go for it.
Yeah, I'll read it because I know I'm in a safe space, but yeah, that's the prefix. So this one's called Was God in the Room? Jesus found himself limp-wristed and nailed onto cherry wood for display. His skirt rested low on his hips as the blood dripped down from his crown to his toes. The gentle musk rose between his abdomen and his thighs. His dreamy gaze transfixed on a vision of Judas's wet lips, a submissive aura, trauma porn on display. Was God in the room when I first laid lustful eyes on the crucifix on the wall?
What was inspiration for this poem?
Yeah. Growing up in an immigrant home and just seeing so much Jesus imagery.
Neta que sí.
And how sexual some of it is, whether knowingly or unknowingly. Uh-huh. Well, you know, there's always memes more recently of like the niño or niña Dios all dressed up in like makeup and the dresses. And that's just how it, the niño Dios has always been presented, you know, in figurine. And obviously the queers kind of reclaim that. But in the context of this poem, yeah, just seeing so much sexy Jesus everywhere, like shirtless and like
that's
muscular,
right.
And then, you know, hearing about his relationship with Judas and how la última traición fue un beso, right? And how our communities kind of relate to, oh, well, that was the culture then, they kissed on the cheek or, you know, what have you. But it's just like, you know, homegirl was hanging out with 12 other men all the time.
hay algo allí.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the inspo, like seeing myself kind of like as a kid, like, this, is this supposed to be sexy? Like, why is this figure, you know, that's so important to our culture, that why is it presented this way? So that's what inspired it.
And if I can make reference to the Virgin Mary too, you know, porque I don't know, this is also controversial, is the purity, the Marianismo, lo oculta que es la Virgen María, no? And how Chicana feminists began to redefine that as a sexual being, right? And I know this is controversial for some folks, and it's okay if you're not there with us, it's fine, you know, you're in your own journey. But like, when I was exposed to this by Chicano feminists when I was going to teach a Chicano feminist class, you know, it's like, okay, Hortensia, you need to unlearn all this stuff that you grew up and like be open to all this. And that was, you know, part of my own journey and own healing, but it was tough because it's completely different from how the Virgin Mary is being presented. Y también donde quiera estaba en las casas.
No, see, and for those in still in that journey there, like, I think what clicked for me specifically con la Virgen was she's so celebrated for being virginal, but we don't always talk about like her, so, you know, obviously this is all mythological and, you know, at least for me, that's where I am in my process, but we're celebrating someone that was pregnant without their knowledge, without their consent. Mm. So I think folks need to also mm-hmm. acknowledge that. And I think that's a not so simple because it's a tough topic, but a simple entry point to kind of questioning mm-hmm. What we're worshiping and what we're putting on a pedestal.
Mm, yes. ¿Y tu segundo poema?
Yeah. Ay, Dios. Son tantos que... And I honestly haven't had a reading in so long, but I'll read the last one. This will be summer of 2016. We gather at the hilltop edge of Pacoima and attempt to form a circle as the warmth of golden hour soothes our skin, shines on our tears, and simmers our grief. We gather to speak your names one by one, 49 of you who were gunned down on Latin night at the gay club. We speak the names of Black and Brown trans people murdered, the number surging year after year after year. We print out your names on strips of transparent film and place each one on string and delicately wrap them around the front yard tree. Your names now dance with the breeze and shimmer under the moonlight.
Es un homenaje. Es hermoso el poema.
Gracias. Now, obviously, I wrote that thinking of all of our siblings that mm-hmm. we lost at the Pulse shooting and, mm-hmm. and all of our trans siblings that are still murdered to this That's day, right. whether here in the States or in Mexico or mm-hmm. in Palestina, in sí. Israel también.
Sí, sí. Y la realidad, ¿no?, de la violencia que existe por existir. O sea, so much is the threat of our queerness that violence is inflicted. Yeah, this is real. Mm. Such a powerful poem. You're such a blessing, and this book brings so much healing.
Oh, gracias, doctora, and likewise, your podcast for me, the episodes I've listened to have been really healing, and I really appreciate the space y la invitación. Y cuando quieras, if you want to chat, get coffee, or even text me.
Claro. No. Te voy a, como dicen, te doy la mano. No, ¿cómo va? ¿Cómo él dice dicho? Te doy la mano, me agarras el pie. No sé cómo va. So you say, shit, whatever. ¿Por qué lo dije? Ah, no, just kidding. Y so what's up for you this year? What are your intentions? What projects are you going to be working this year? And then lastly, how can folks get in contact and find you?
Yeah, so I'm gonna me voy a poner las pilas y voy a ponerme a promocionar un poco otra vez el libro. I took a break because I was getting my licensure. So that's another thing I'm envisioning, more writing. I just had a job interview for a new position that takes into account like my licensure. So knocking on wood that things go well. So that those are what I'm looking forward to this year. And yeah, more writing. I think I need that again in my life. And y'all can find me on Instagram. My handle on there is Jotita de Amor, or you can find me, you know, just searching Umbi on there. Yeah, I don't have a website yet. That's coming. But that's where you can reach me, and my email's on there as well if y'all want to reach out.
Yeah, and I'll make sure to include this in the show notes. And lastly, is there anything else you want to share that I didn't ask?
Hey.
Claro que hay mucho que platicar, ¿no? ¿Verdad? Siempre hay mucho.
Yeah. I was having my coffee before and I was like, okay, I'm gonna bring this up and y ahora no. Me viene nada a la mente. No, pero sí, I think reiterating lo importante que es encontrarnos even virtually community. Again, remember we have have so much access in the palm of our hand. Obviously, so much harm comes from that as well. Con tanta muerte en Palestina. And that's in my heart as well. And I hope that those of us or the audience listening, if y'all are still on the fence about the genocide happening, we have to keep in mind that we can be supporting, you know, governments that are killing innocent people, regardless of how much religion is embellished and propagandized to divide us. So I think use social media to your advantage and also with caution, but communities out there, we just have to make that step. And community can mean one person, right? And even yourself, you can write to yourself while you figure the next step out. So don't count yourself out. Love on yourself too.
Mm-hmm. What a beautiful way to end. Muchísimas gracias por estar en este espacio, por confiar en el espacio. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I will see you in the next episode of Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita. Nos vemos.
Muchas gracias por acompañarme en Dismantling Diet Culture, Fuck Being Calladita podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Especially be sure to rate and review the podcast if you really like it. If you leave me a review on Apple Podcasts, you become eligible for a free 30-minute coaching session. That's right, así como escuchaste, one free session. Once you leave your review, you can screenshot it and email it to me, and I'll send you a link to sign up. If you didn't like it, don't worry, así está bien. Follow me on social media, on Instagram and TikTok, @Dr. Hortensia Jiménez.